accession number 19090, Reel 1.
Mr. Smith, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
I was born in East Kent.
Which part of East Kent?
Well, it's about 12 miles from Ashford. My father was a local parson, a country parson. We lived in a big rectory.
What was the name of the village?
Stanford. That's spelt with an N. Stanford.
And which year were you born?
1913.
Did you grow up in the Ashford area and go to school there?
I went to school at St. John's Leatherhead, which was a boarding school in Surrey. Public school, a minor public school.
And how old were you when you left there?
10.
To go where?
And I was 10 and I stayed there and I left school and when I was 17.
Where did you go to after school?
Cambridge.
Which college was that?
Pembroke College, Cambridge.
To read what?
To read history.
And were you 21 when you finished at Pembroke?
I think I was older than that. 3 years. I did a year of postgraduate teachers training, which was quite a new thing in those days. You did an extra year and then took another exam on the theory and practice of teaching, which wasn't actually a great deal of practical use.
Where did you go to teach?
I went to Bedford. You went away for a term for teaching practice. I don't know whether you did that.
Yes.
And, Bedford Modern School.
Were you a teacher when war broke out?
Yes, I was. I was a housemaster.
And did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I did hear him.
Under what circumstances?
Under what circumstances? I think we'd just come back from a holiday. It was in the summer holidays still, wasn't it? September the 3rd.
What were your feelings about the news?
Well, I mean, I'd already been involved in military affairs with the school cadet force and all that sort of thing, and I sort of automatically thought I'd go into the army. I was, I suppose, a reserved occupation, but it didn't really appeal to me, that idea. So, in due course, I enlisted through the Inns of Court, who were an officer producing unit. And in November, I got married, and 3 days later, I was in the army. And I went to Maidstone, to the depot at Maidstone, the Royal West Kents, because I opted for the Royal West Kents because of my brother being in the Buffs. And then from there, I think it was 6 weeks basic training. Now we used to call it square bashing. And after that, I went to the OCTU, the officer producing unit at Colchester. And then there was a 4 month course at Colchester, and I finished that in April 1940, just in time to avoid Dunkirk. And when I got my commission, I was eventually posted to the depot at Maidstone. and then posted out to the 4th Battalion of the Royal West Kents, who were reforming after Dunkirk up in the Midlands. And so there I was, arriving at Retford in the Midlands. And
what was morale in the battalion like after Dunkirk?
Well, it wasn't bad, actually, because the 4th were, of course, a territorial battalion. And I don't know, people criticised the TA, but they were very closely knit and probably more intelligent soldiers than the sort of regular. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And so I think morale was quite good. But of course, in a way, one was living in a sort of unreal, because one couldn't actually visualize what would happen if the Germans really seriously contemplated invading England. We did all sorts of exercises up in the Lincolnshire area. And then, I think it was October 1940, we were transferred down to the Kent coast. And we went on coast defence down at Dungeness.
What did coastal defence consist of at that time?
I beg your pardon?
What did the coastal defence consist of?
Coastal defence? Well, a whole row of pioneer corps had been working, beavering away, putting up a whole row of, all the way along the coast, of steel scaffolding. And then inside the scaffolding were the minefields, and then us. And we had our various strong points along the coast road. I don't know whether you know Dungeness, do you?
Yes.
A whole lot of sort of holiday villas along there, holiday bungalows, which provided billets for the troops. And we had, you know, the usual trenches and sandbag fortifications along the edge of the road, overlooking the beach. Well, that was about it.
So this was during the winter?
During the winter months, yes. And I suppose in 1941 we moved back to the Canterbury area, and then we moved out to Deal, where the Kent Collieries, north of Deal, had these slag heaps. And we manned those, where intricate tunnels and in the slag heaps. We had some guns with us, 75s. That was commanding the golf course north of Deal. Well, that went on for a long time, actually, that defence in the Deal area.
What was the mood of the mining population at that time?
What was the, sorry?
The mood of the mining population at that time.
I didn't really meet the miners very much. I don't know very much about that. I don't know whether, I suppose they were still working, those collieries.
Did you think that the Germans would invade?
Yes. I thought they'd have a go. We had a rather ambitious flame-throwing device along the seafront at Deal, which was a
What did that consist of?
Well, it was briefly, it was a sort of oil pipeline with perforations in it, and when the balloon went up, it was ignited, and the oil was squirted out from these different perforations and made a wall of fire along the front. Well, that was the theory behind it. I never saw it working. And then we had, what else do we have? We had Lion lights, which were miniature searchlights in our various positions for lighting up the seafront at night. And then we went on, I think Montgomery came and took over Eastern, Southeastern Command. And we used to go to great lectures by Montgomery in the cinemas in Maidstone and places. The whole division.
Which division was that?
44th. That was the Home Counties Division. And then we went on exercises.
What did you think of Montgomery at that time?
Oh, in a way he was a bit of a joke, but we did recognise that he was, you know, a jolly good soldier and knew what he was talking about. And I think we were glad to have somebody with a bit of zeal in him.
What was your job with the battalion then?
Well, I rose up from being a platoon commander to second in command of the company, rifle company. And I was a captain then, as second in command, second captain of the company. later on, company commanders were given the rank of major. But at that time they weren't, they were captains. So I was second captain of the company.
Which company was that?
Oh, various ones. I got shifted around a bit. I was in D company. Most of that early time I was in D company. Then I went to C. And now, when was this? It was early in 1942. We moved up to the Tadworth area in Surrey, which was called Mobilisation Corner. And by that time, I was in A Company.
Why was it called Mobilisation Corner?
Well, because it was there that the troops were issued with all their equipment, and it was where a division about to be sent abroad consolidated.
Had you by now been in any bombing by the German Air Force?
Bombing?
Yes.
Not really, no. I don't think we were. And then we mobilised and were inspected by the King. The whole division lined the road, you know, Tadworth Heath. And the King drove down in his standing up in a jeep. No, there weren't jeeps then. I don't think we got jeeps until later. Anyway, he was standing up in the vehicle he was in, taking a salute. I was standing at the salute. And then in due course we entrained at Tattenham Corner. Which is quite interesting, it was a part of the Derby course, Tattenham Corner. And we sort of jolted our way in the troop trains all the way round London and ended up at Aintree. So we started with the Grand, well, we started with the Derby and finished with the Grand National. And then at Aintree we were ferried straight away down to our troop ship. And our particular troop ship was the Laconia, L-A-C-O-N-I-A. Do you want me to go on, by the way?
Yes, please.
Well, we embarked on the Laconia, and she took 4,000 men on board because we also had a field regiment, Royal Artillery, and a large number of RE's, Royal Engineers. I think the complement embarked was around about 4,000. She was a 20,000-ton Cunarder who'd been used at the beginning of the war as an armed merchant ship. And so she had a couple of guns on board and so on. And then she'd been converted to become a troop ship. And a second-in-command of A Company, I had the job of supervising the smooth embarkation of my particular lot of men. And I remember watching them filing up the gangway and wondering what was in store for us. And then they went down into these mess decks, which were really rather horrible, blacked out. Crowded, airless, and hammocks slung over the tables, and there they were. And of course, we actually moved off after the embarkation that same night. We stole out to sea without any great fanfare or anything. And the next morning, we could see the rest of the convoy, which had been embarking at various places, and the Mersey, and also Glasgow. And the chief preoccupation for the troops at that time was seasickness. As soon as we rounded the North Cape of Ireland, and I happened to be duty officer going round the mess decks when the ship met the Atlantic swell, was a pretty traumatic experience. I was very pleased that I wasn't affected, though. And we did sail in quite distinguished company. We had about 30 merchant ships and liners in our convoy. Viceroy of India was had the convoy commander on board. There were two big American Santa boats, and there was the Orontes and the Otranto. In the middle of the convoy was HMS Nelson, the battleship, presumably to deal with any surface raiders that were still active. I think at that stage in the war, the Germans still had the odd surface raider. And Nelson was supposed to be able to see them off with her 16-inch guns. The other thing, of course, was that almost as soon as we got on board our troop ship, we practiced our drill, emergency drill, for in case we were torpedoed. So all the different companies in the battalion had their particular lifeboat stations to go to. And of course we wore these life belts wherever we went. Life jackets, really. But you know, the troops soon got used to being at sea, and the seasickness was only a passing phase. After that, we were busy all the time with, weapon training and lectures and all those sort of things. The ship became a hive of activity in the daytime. And then at night, down in the mess decks, they all played housey-housey. Today's bingo. And there was sports organized too, where possible. There was a humorous occasion when the battalion tug-of-war team took on a team of enormous gunners. And just at the vital moment when they heaved off, the ship turned on one of its zigzags and tilted as it turned. And the gunner's team came hurtling down into the scuppers on top of the battalion team. It was really very funny. But you see, so we went on. Always the nagging fear, in my mind at any rate, the nagging fear that, you know, we might be torpedoed. It wasn't a good time in the war, 1942. Not a good time at all.
Which month was it?
I beg pardon?
Which month was it?
Which?
Month. Which month of the year?
Oh, sorry. Well, we sailed at May the 31st, 42. And, of course, that was, as I say, before the tide turned in the war, and a tremendous number of sinkings, the Atlantic convoys, and the two German battlecruisers had escaped and gone up the channel in February without being damaged, Scharnhorst and Gneisenau. In the desert, the Germans seemed to be getting the upper hand over the Eighth Army. And one way or another, it wasn't very good, the prospect of the war. So we went on, and we called in at Freetown, on the west coast of Africa, to refuel, and then on again down to the Cape. And we arrived at the Cape just at the same time as Tobruk fell in the desert. And so that really decided the division's fate. They were needed, we were needed in the desert rather than in India. And so we had a day, or was it 2 days, in Cape Town. We did a route march, and the various entertainments put on by the local ladies for the officers. Rather low-key dance, I remember going to. And then off again, and increasing in speed. It was a 14-knot convoy, originally. But the Laconia developed mechanical trouble and couldn't keep up with the rest of the convoy. So for one very uneasy day, we remained dawdling along in the Madagascar Strait, which had become a hunting ground of Japanese submarines, and waited for a slow convoy to come up, which they duly did, which we joined. That was a rather uneasy interlude, as a matter of fact. And then we eventually reached the Red Sea. The temperature in the Red Sea at that time of year, beginning of July now, it was absolutely terrific. Unfortunate troops crowded together in their mess decks. Had a pretty hellish time. Arriving off Port Tewfik after the rest of the division had landed, we were ferried ashore in lighters, and then entrained and went off to Ismailia, where the battalion camped with the rest of the brigade, and of course all the available tentage had been taken by the time we got there, which wasn't very nice. But scrounging went on, and we eventually got enough tents to house everybody. And then we went training various movements across the desert and water discipline and all that sort of thing we learned. More experienced anyway. And then, of course, just after we arrived, General Auchinleck handed over command to Montgomery. You remember that?
Yes.
And Monty came out from England to take command of us, take command of the 8th Army.